and had a reputation that I never saw any evidence of this myself, but according to some of these wives, she had a reputation of being kind of a flirt. And so there was some looking askance at her. She was in the legislature only this one session. And she had been elected from somewhere out in Northeast Portland. I don't know that she made any great accomplishments in the legislature, nor do I know much about what her interests were. I think she followed the lead pretty much of Democratic leadership in the House. I guess that's about all I can say about her. But some of the other women who came along later were very, very influential. Jean Lewis was elected to the 1955 legislature, and to the House, and she later ran for the Senate, was elected to the Senate, and she was a lawyer, and she was a very good legislator. I think she later became a judge, if I remember right, after she left the legislature. But she was a good, solid member of the legislature. Again, as I recall, I guess she served on the Judiciary Committee, and I think she served on the Education Committee, and was very respected, very much respected. By 1955, you could see the influence of women becoming greater and greater in the legislature, because 1955, you had four members now of the of the House who were women. One was Jean Lewis, I mentioned. Kay Merriweather. I don't know that I can tell you much about her. I knew her well, but I can't remember just what her interests were. Mm-hmm. And then there was Kitty Musa from the Dalles. And Kitty was a conservative Democrat. I think Kay might have been a Republican, I don't remember. But Kitty was a Democrat, but a very conservative one. And her husband, Ben Musa served in the Senate, and they were conservative Democrats. And when Kitty took a position, it was as firm as a rock of Gibraltar. You didn't move her. She could be very stubborn. Now, I never had any problems. I don't mean to indicate that I had problems with Kitty, but these were comments by legislators that she was unmovable once she had made up her mind, and she felt that she was right. Mm-hmm. But she served, I think, about three sessions in the legislature.
Does that mean she could be so rigid that she'd make mistakes?
Pardon?
That she would get on an issue where she really needed to change and perhaps...
Sometimes.
Held so hard that she couldn't.
Sometimes. But mostly I think this criticism came from her not being very ready to compromise. Mm-hmm. And she could be rather sharp to people sometimes. In a situation where they were doing some negotiating on trying to bring about a compromise with her. Then in 1957, you had Shirley Field, who became a very influential legislator. And she was from Portland and lived out in the Southwest and was a lawyer. And was very, very active in the Republican Party and very much respected in the Republican Party. And was very influential on education matters and again, things like welfare, issues, workman's compensation, unemployment compensation issues, served, I'm trying to remember how many sessions she served, but served several sessions, and did a very creditable job in the legislature.
Now, on those issues, was she more liberal than her fellow Republicans?
She was liberal in the sense that Bob Packwood was liberal. Mm-hmm. That is, in those days, there had been a tendency in the Oregon legislature through the years to be very conservative on matters dealing with labor and on matters dealing with judicial matters. And Shirley was more liberal than the rest of her party on issues like those. Very, very much dedicated to the principles of the Civil Liberties Union. And that caused some legislators to think she was too liberal too. You got to bear in mind that the legislature had been so long under the control of very conservative Republicans that the liberalism of people like Shirley Field and Mark Hatfield and Bob Packwood were not all that liberal. It wasn't all that liberal. You would view it now as being probably middle of the road.
They had something to define themselves against?
Pardon?
They had something to define themselves against or in context of? Would that help them to identify themselves as liberal if they were surrounded by so many conservative Republicans?
Well, I think what they were really reflecting was the attitude of their constituencies. Because generally speaking, Republicans from Portland were more liberal than Republicans from anywhere else in the state. And it's because they had elements of liberalism in their own constituency. Now, that may not be the entire story. Part of it is their own bent, philosophical bent. But also, that philosophical attitude of theirs was probably formed in a society in Portland that differed somewhat from the culture in the rest of the state. Well, other women legislators that I thought were quite influential Well, 1959, Shirley Field, Grace Peck. Wick Shaw from Springfield, or Eugene, rather. I believe her husband was a professor, or maybe she was. She was connected with the university at one time anyway, I think. And she became rather influential, again, in matters of education and welfare and labor matters. Then there were Beulah Hand from out here in Clackamas County. I don't think she ever achieved a great deal of power or was too influential because she tended to take attitudes that were a little too liberal. But by 1959, there were then 7 women in the legislature. And some of these women had been elected through the effort of the Oregon Education Society. Nancy Kirkpatrick was from Lebanon. I believe she was a school teacher. And Wick Shaw had the support of the Oregon Education Association. And probably Beulah Hand, I don't know for sure. But at any rate, there were two organizations that helped to swell the feminine membership of the legislature. One was the League of Women Voters, and the other one was the Oregon Education Association. Then, in 1961, Fritzi Chouinard was elected to the legislature, and her husband was Dr. Chouinard, who had a orthopedic clinic out northwest Portland, treated a lot of athletes, and incidentally, who was deeply involved in the Oregon Historical Society, and was he wrote a book on the Oregon Trail. He was deeply involved in getting the Oregon Trail established and maintained. Isn't there some marker or something that's maintained?
Oh, yeah.
He was deeply involved in that. Mm-hmm. Well, Fritzi Chouinard was a graduate of Washington State University and a very bright person. When she was elected to the legislature, she was probably in her middle or late 50s, I would guess. Because she was well educated, and she had a lot of drive, she became influential very rapidly in the legislature. She was conservative Republican, but in the years that she served, she was rather influential. Not as influential as Betty Roberts, perhaps, but I think the two most influential people that I ever saw in the legislature were Betty Roberts and Vera Katz. Mm-hmm. And Betty Roberts really became rather quite powerful. Just sheer hard work and ability to get along well with people. and having a very, very good brain. She was an attorney, a remarkable person who brought up quite a large family, had been a school teacher, and there was another person who got elected to the legislature through the efforts of the Oregon Education Association. Been a school teacher, went to law school while she was teaching, I believe. Raised a family at the same time, had 3 or 4 kids. And how she did it all, I don't know. She's a real dynamo.
And married Frank Roberts on top of it.
Yeah, and then married Keith Skelton. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Remarkable person. And she, too, was very... she was very influential on a lot of matters, like, environmental matters, education matters, and then other issues that had to do with welfare, women's rights, and things of that sort. Fritzi Chouinard became a quite effective member of the tax committee and did some really good work there. Vera Katz, my first introduction to her was when she was lobbying for, it was something to do with equal rights of women. And she was very, she was looked at askance by a lot of legislators and by a lot of lobbyists because she was very vocal and would she dressed very mod. And she would come down to the legislature in these black boots and kind of a short skirt, and she would be loud in the restaurant and in the hallways, and there was a lot of poking fun at her and writing her off as among lobbyists and legislators. What should I say, being ineffective by the way she handled herself. But they were to learn that this was a very bright gal who would learn very quickly how to handle herself and get things done. And then when she ran for the legislature, It was quite an accomplishment to get elected from the district that she got elected from, and I think she probably achieved that by just door-to-door hard work, and getting a lot of women to support her, including a lot of very wealthy people up in the Southwest Hills, who normally didn't vote for Democrats. But then when she was in the legislature, she learned very rapidly. And yeah, of course, you know the history since then, that she has become one of the really influential legislators of probably the last 20 or 30 years.
Yeah, real leader of the legislature.
Pardon?
Real leader of the legislature.
Yes, and she has changed a great deal, I think, in her perception of what the of what issues she should support. I'm not absolutely certain of this, but it was my impression that when she first came to the legislature, she would never have thought of supporting a sales tax. And she had, I'm sure, strong feelings about, well, I think she was very skeptical of anything that industry wanted. But she learned quite rapidly, especially after she was appointed to Ways and Means, that her initial perceptions were probably not correct. And she finally came around to even supporting a sales tax, which most Democrats would look at with horror. But I remember very well Sam Johnson saying to me one time, and Sam Johnson was on Ways and Means, and Sam Johnson was from Redmond, and he was the partnership, he had a partnership in the Jefferson Plywood Company and the lumber company that cut Indian timber at Warm Springs Lumber Company. And he and Bob Wilson were partners, and Bob Wilson later became chairman of the board of Weyerhaeuser. They were partners in that operation. And Sam came from a very wealthy family because his grandfather had bought timber out here in Oregon in the very early years, and his family had been involved in the Pacific Lumber Company in California. And you would not expect that Vera Katz and he would become sort of close associates in ways and means, but they did. And so Sam came to me one day and he said, "You people in the industry, you ought to be giving Vera Katz some money, support her, give her some campaign money." I said, "This gal is a very conservative gal when it comes to spending." and so that illustrates how she grew as she learned more about the problems of the state and how to get things done in the legislature. She's a very bright person. And I did follow Sam's suggestion and got her some money from a PAC.
Were people conscious, say, when she first came on, of her Jewishness?
Oh, I had never... You know, in all the time I was in the legislature, I never saw any feeling among legislators or lobbyists, either one, that would, or any indication that they were that they felt less of a person because he was Jewish. I never saw any of that. As a matter of fact, one of the most loved little legislators, although he was not considered necessarily a really influential legislator, but he was very much loved, was Sam Wilderman. And Sam Wilderman was an attorney from Portland, a little short fellow with a marvelous sense of humor, and always joking or pulling pranks of some kind. And everybody around the legislature just liked Sam. They liked him. and I never saw any examples of prejudice toward Jewish people in the legislature.
Not part of the scene.
Now, for example, there was a man in the Senate, can't think of his name now, but he owned a string of restaurants. What was his name? who was Jewish. And he became one of the legislators that the Republicans worked with on worked closely with him on a lot of legislation. I think he was a Republican, but he was very much liked. I can't recall his name. Schlesinger. Was it Schlesinger? Something like that. No, I never saw any indication of that. If it existed, I didn't know about it.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Can I stop for a bit? I have a couple.
You were saying something further about the reaction to Vera Katz, which seemed to me to add something to it.
Well, this comment is limited to the time when she was a lobbyist. And I can remember legislators commenting on it, lobbyists commenting on it, and some of the legislators' wives. When she would come down to the restaurant, she'd have some friends with her, and there was a lot of loud talk, rather aggressive nature that she had. And it was a reaction like people sometimes have to some of the Jewish element in Chicago or New York, where they tend to be pushy, aggressive, loud. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think Vera used some language sometimes too that shocked.
Oh, really?
Some of the women.
Oh, do you remember any examples?
No, I don't remember anything offhand, but. She used language that now you wouldn't consider to be shocking because it's, you know, it's common now. But she used it. And some of the legislators weren't used to that. Mm-hmm. You know, Oregon was sort of a sheltered state in that respect.
But is it perhaps especially in women that it's more difficult, was more difficult?
Oh, I think so. You know, I think a man could have done some of those things. And it would not have caused the same reaction. Although a man would have probably been criticized for it too. But not to the extent that they would criticize a woman for it, because they would expect a woman to be more ladylike. I don't mean to indicate by any means that I have prejudices toward Jewish people in New York or Chicago, but the fact does remain that those people come from a culture.
Mm-hmm. It's a different
where
culture.
It is accepted that they argue loudly, speak loudly, do it aggressively. And so I think it was that kind of action by her at the time she was lobbying at the legislature when she first came into the legislature that raised some eyebrows. But she learned very rapidly not to be that way.
Well, you know, a woman. It seems to me that there's a long distance to travel between the period in which women were ladylike in just about any setting, except occasionally for a populist woman leader in Kansas or something like that who could stand up and be tough as nails and so forth. But in the ordinary setting, women have to somehow come from being ladylike, but interested in dedicated to politics, to where they are eventually just really very businesslike and effective and so forth.
Right.
And I wonder if there's a whole range of progression.
I think in contrast with some of that early action by Vera, that led to her being criticized. And again, I want to stress that that didn't continue to be that way, because she learned that this was not accepted behavior, I guess. In contrast to that, Marie Newberger could be very tough.